Welcome to Football Journeys, the Untold Stories, where in Series 2 we're telling diverse tales of joy, triumph, heartache, disappointment, redemption and everything else in between, by telling you the stories of people who have different roles and identities in the game.
We are delighted to be working in partnership with Body Mind Performance as our sponsor on this and other episodes. Body Mind Performance is a coaching company focused on helping young athletes with the mental and physical challenges of playing competitive football. If you feel that you're lacking in confidence, overthinking in matches or underperforming on the pitch, then please contact Emily Tillman for mental performance coaching, position-specific strength and conditioning or technical guidance. You can find Emily on Instagram at bodymindperformance_ or via her website at www.bodymindperformance.org.
This week on Football Journeys, we speak to JJ, a girl that doesn't take no for an answer. A refugee who fled to the UK from Somalia when she was 10 years old. She's got an incredible passion for the game and a unique pathway that's taken her from playing the game, coaching the game, and now refereeing the game. This is JJ's story.
This is Football Journeys. This week on Football Journeys, we've very much got an alternative pathway. We're talking to Joahir Roble, known as JJ. Welcome, JJ.
Thank you.
When we talk to our guests on Football Journeys, we quite often talk about the early days. We talk about the struggles. We talk about passion for football. But for this one, the struggles were very, very real. Brought up in Mogadishu, Somalia, at the age of 10, JJ and her family had to flee her home country. But she'd already gained a passion for football on the beaches of Lido. And when she came to the UK, she moved to Wembley in the eye of Wembley Stadium and developed a huge passion for football. But as we sit here talking to the 27-year-old JJ now, she's not looking at her career as a football player, but as a referee. Welcome, JJ. Welcome to Football Journeys. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. That was a good introduction.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been lots of fun researching your journey. I think it's very true to say that you are an inspiration to girls, to young Muslims, to refugees, to people here in the UK. It's difficult to know where to start. Well, no, it's not difficult to know where to start. Let's take you back to Somalia.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you left Somalia at the age of 10.
Yeah.
So you'd had formative years there. And it wasn't England that created a passion for football. You had a passion for football then. So Can you tell us a little bit about being a passionate young girl in Somalia,
That's
kicking
funny.
A football around? Or was it a football?
I actually don't know what it was made of. So I would say the passion literally started in Somalia because literally football is the national sport in Somalia. So they have a men's team, there's no women's team. As a child, you're like, you know what, one day they will come. By the time I'm older, there will be a women's team. That didn't happen. So I'm in Somalia, 2000. So I was born there, but you know the passion started when I was about 4, 5, 6 around there. I honestly, all I wanted to do was just play football. So we go to mosque and then we go to school, and then there's so much free time. So 3 until 9 o'clock, all the kids can freely run around. Like it's just so nice. No one's gonna tell you to come in because the civil war is there, but it's still quiet, you know. Every neighborhood is different. Whatever is happening in that neighborhood is not the same as whatever is happening in our neighborhood. So there was time when everyone was like, you know, just stay around the house, play with the boys. I don't remember playing with girls.
But you were the only girl playing.
Yeah, with the boys in front of our house. And there was times when they were like, every Friday we'll go to the beach to play football. And then there's like someone like just doing fish, they're selling stuff, and then there's tourists come around, you know, they're taking pictures of the kids. We'll go swim and then play football the whole time. It was barefoot, yeah. That was so nice. And the Civil War, literally, now you can hear that it's getting closer to our neighborhood. And then my mom was like, no, it's still okay. Like, you still go to school. Like, life is still normal. You know, you get used to it. And then my dad was like, no, this is getting a bit serious. Like, let's just stop the kids going to school. And then my mom, like, she insisted. She was like, no, because their generation was nice. Like, they never had no problem. So my dad was a bit, yeah, you know, we need to stop the school. And then all the kids are like, no, let's continue. There's 9 of us. And then I think it did get really, really hard. So we stopped going mosque, still going to school. And then now football, the beach stuff, you know, Friday, that's done because we would go for an hour. It takes an hour to get to the beach. And then everything's becoming smaller and smaller. So no one would go shopping far away. It was just at local shops. And then my mom was like, yeah, guys, like, let's just find out ways to get asylum. And then they did their thing. I'm like, yeah, I'm not involved. I'm joking. I didn't even have any chance. But yeah, it was good.
So, I mean, we're not going to go into the history of the wars in Somalia, but just
it's, I wouldn't even know. Anyway.
Well, quite. And you were 10 when you left. But I think it's probably important for listeners to know there's been rumblings of civil war since back in the 90s.
Yeah.
But you as a child, I mean, were you ever aware that there was violence, there were risks of violence, or was it just the fact that your parents knew that this stuff was growing and growing and growing, and therefore your home country, your home was no longer safe for you? So tell us about how you found out, oh my word, I'm going to have to leave home.
Yeah, like the only way you can find out is because, you know, schools is becoming, you know, you can hear things like kids are like, oh, you know what, soon we might have to stop going to school. My mom's always telling me to come home early. Like you can hear the kids are always talking, you know, they know what's happening. But the only way what I found out was when we were no longer allowed to play outside. And then my dad was like, you know, we got visas. He told us the day before we left or the night before we left. He's like, I don't think he, because you know how a lot of the kids that I played football with, I lived in the neighborhood, not a lot of them got visas. So some had to stay there. Even till this day, they're there. I connected them through Facebook, don't worry. they're actually okay. And so my dad's like, oh, you know, if I tell you guys, then someone else is going to find out. So on the night, he was like, yeah, you guys were going to the UK. And they were like, huh? What? No. Well, like, I had a lot
about
the UK.
Did you have a worldview about the UK when your dad said that?
I had this Premier League. You know, in Somalia, literally, there's cafeterias everywhere. So all the guys are like watching every, like, all the time, they're just watching football. And then a girl comes in and they're like, staring, and I'm like, hello, I want to take a peek as well. It's the Premier League. Nah, they wouldn't let any girl come in. So I think it was that time everyone got in the car. It was night, so I think it was really late. We all got in the car, and then no one said goodbye to none of their friends. We just left.
And what about other family members, you know, cousins, uncles, and aunts? It was just, you're gone, mum, dad, and your 8 brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I remember there's still cousins there in Somalia. They didn't get the opportunity to come here. And then we went on the airport. This is my first time seeing, like, literally white people, Chinese people. I only thought there was, like, Somali people in the world. You know, when you're young, you're just silly. And then I'm like, whoa, where are we? This place is different. You know, the airport, there's so many different people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, people with blue eyes, people, is this stuff even real? And then all our siblings were just giggling, making fun of people.
So was it like, you say about the Premier League and you had a perception of England, were you excited to go to England, or were you a little bit, you know, I don't want to leave where I am? Was it more an excitement?
No, I would say I loved being in Somalia. Like Somalia, we were just happy in Somalia. But you know, when you like football and then there's a country that actually allows girls to play football, the Premier League is big. Every weekend there's football. Like it's quite big.
So even at that young age, that's the first thing you're thinking of?
Honestly, football was the only thing I was thinking about. And then all my siblings, everyone played football. And then when we came here, we were like in Wembley, right?
You'd heard of Wembley.
I've definitely heard of Wembley, England national home. So we had the 6-bedroom, big garden, and then the only thing we can think about was big space for football. Let's just, you know, let's have 2 teams. My older sister and my older brother, you know, they'll be the captains. They split us up and then we just play football garden.
Your sister played as well?
Everyone played. Yeah. At that age, I think everyone played. And then now they're trying to act girly, makeup and everything.
It's strange to do the parallel. So Lee, you grew up in what I would regard as a tough part of the UK in Motherwell. And there would have been expectations on you, girls do this, they don't play football. It's difficult to compare that to Somalia and the expectations within Somalia. But, I mean, you were considered a curiosity up there. You were the girl that played football.
Yeah, I'm listening and I'm in awe, but when you put it like that, very, very similar in many ways, but I had it easy. I just had to deal with the comments, really, and when people didn't think I should play football, but I was safe. I know people from the outside would walk in and think, where are we at?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to be okay? Are we going to come out here? But day to day it was, that's all I had was football, and I didn't really care about the comments. I didn't care about people thinking that I shouldn't play football, and sure, it's a passion.
Yeah, it's a passion.
No one's going to stop us.
It's true. If you love it, honestly, nothing, no comments matter. And you can just play week in, week out.
What do you think growing up, do you think football taught you discipline or taught you what love really is? For me, like, football was my first love.
Football is literally my first love as well. Like, with football, I think I've met all the great people in my life through football, honestly, till this day. Like, I wouldn't say, I met amazing people in uni. They were nice, but they did not like football the way I love football. So our connection is not like that. So, like, everyone that has in my life is literally because of football. Like, the things they taught me, all my networking is through football. All my happy memories are football. Like, I remember taking my little brother to football, and there, that's when I started to understand what it actually is. You know, you have to sleep on time, you have to eat this type of food, you have to, you know, you learn these things. And I'm like, you know, if he's allowed to play, what? Then this is when I said to my parents, like, guys, I know I came, you know, this is a country full of opportunities, and I know, you know, that you have to make something out of your life, but it's okay to love football. And they're like, no, have it on the side and just go to uni, do this, do that, maybe have PhD. I was like, what's that? And they're like, this country is full of opportunities, people will support you, you know. I was like, yeah, I understand, but also football's big here, so maybe I can become a footballer. And they're like, huh?
to go back on that, something I know about your story is you described playing in the garden with your siblings, and that was safe, that was okay, and your parents were okay with that.
Didn't mind that, honestly.
Then you said you took your little brother,
and I
know just from listening to other interviews that you've given and reading your story, that was a little trick you played in your parents, I think. Take your little brother to football.
I got him.
Because they would accept him going, but you were just taking him, and all of a sudden you were kicking the ball around as well.
Literally, when I'm waiting with the parents, I'm like, on the side, I'm playing football. And plus, it makes me happy. Like, we're on the ground. We're just there. I'm like, I don't care if no one's paying me. I don't care, you know. I'm here on the pitch. I'll take him. Like, just the excitement going into the parents' cars, driving to different clubs. I'm like, that's proper happiness. I don't mind it.
Before we kind of delve even further into football, again, it's me not holding it together probably, but we should maybe come back to actually you arriving in the UK.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone listening who's not heard your story before would realise this, that you were not an English speaker when you arrived here.
No.
And is it true to say you didn't speak one word of English as a 10-year-old before you started school in the UK?
Nothing.
I mean, how on earth do you cope with that?
No, the only reason why we managed this is because my siblings were together. Like, all of us were like, I think four of us went to the same school. So when we started school, yes, the teachers are like, you're starting from year six. And then my mum is having this conversation with us in the reception. She's like, yeah, this is a very important year. You need to pass your exams. You need to... I was like, mum, are you for real? Like, I'm speaking down in Somali. And she's like, yeah, there's SATs, there's everything. I want you guys to smash it. I was like, what? No, that's not going to happen. Sure, right.
Wow. Well, we think, I mean, we're not very good in this country at learning other languages. I think about my ability to speak French, having grown up 30 miles away from France. You know, if I can order a baguette, I'm quite happy. And your mum wants you to just smash the sats.
But you know, my head teacher was, year six head teacher. What
they call? Head of year.
Head of year, yeah. Her name was like Miss White. She was so nice. She was like, She made me sit next to this Somali girl, and then the Somali girl would translate for me. And then she was like to, I think she got one of the, you know, those teachers that help you, they get you out, they pull you out of class and they give you like one-to-one.
Yeah.
That was so helpful. Like, I was learning so quickly with that teacher. He spoke Somali as well. Wow. And they were so nice. I was cracking jokes. I was like, yo.
Wowzers.
Do colouring. It was so nice. Like, it made me get into it, like, so slowly, but, like, without even me realising, like, I'm learning every day. And then the playground is a different story. Like, the shy girl in the classroom and the playground. Do I even need English in the playground?
Well, I was going to say, so you're the girl in the hijab and presumably you've got quite long dresses on.
Yeah,
traditional long skirts, Somali
yeah,
dress.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you're kicking a football around.
No, in the school we wore black long skirts and then white shirt. I don't care, I'm still running. This can't stop me, honestly. So in the playground, honestly, I can't speak anything. But I was like, these kids are playing football. I'm not going to stand here, like, walk around. You know how some kids, they walk around. There's so many groups in primary school, like, in the playground. Some are, like, just playing some little games. Some are in the actual main playground. And I'm like, oh, how do I get that? I didn't go there straight away, you know. The first 2 months, I was like, I have to wait. Let's see, read the system. And then my siblings, we can all, like, link up. I was like, yeah, you guys make your own friends, you know, whoever gets to that playground first, you know, get me in, you know, help me out. And then my brothers all managed in and they're like, no, you're not playing. I'm like, whoa, I swear we were a team. and the PE teacher, like, he saw that I can play football. And then when he was there, I would just stand next to him. I wouldn't get involved. And I watched the kids play and I'm like, oh, when am I going to play? And then I started to learn a bit of English, like, you know, shoot and all that stuff and score. I got in, I got to play with them, and then week in, week out, and one day I figured out, you know, the only way to become friends with these kids is if you have a football. So all the kids would be like, be your best, like, who cares if you speak English or not? But the kids are like, yeah, come. I'm like, yeah, now we're talking. Let's go in.
And that's presumably, it's a big ethnic mix in Wembley. There will be some Somali kids, but you've got white kids and kids from all over the world. I mean, which brings us to a conversation, an important one. We've got the crisis in Afghanistan at the moment we're talking.
Yeah.
And that's made a lot of refugees across the world, and we're welcoming a load into this country. I guess I've got two questions.
Yeah.
How welcome did you and your family feel in this country? But also, how important was it for you to be welcomed so far as you were welcomed over here?
I think, to even hear the day we got the visa, to feel like, you know, we're welcome somewhere, you know, we're going there, from getting the tickets to arriving there and having a home, like, that we were like, honestly, we're nobody, like, we our country is finished, and then, like, another country is trying to take us in, give us a home, school, you know, even make my passion, like, grow. You know, I love football. So that was so amazing. Like, you get food. I was like, wow. And there are people running around in Somalia still, like, clueless what's happening. So I was just so grateful, so privileged, and so honoured to be in this country. So seeing the refugees from, you know, hearing about the stories in Afghanistan, that I think is so important to... Because, you know, these people, it's not their fault, whatever happens. Like, politics is there, but there's young kids, young girls that have dreamed maybe to, you know, become a footballer. You never know. Like, they're out there, and then there's people that just want to start life. They just want to have a little basic stuff. And, yeah, it's so important that other countries open their doors and let them in, and, you know, because it can happen to anyone. But if Somali was safe, I'm like, everyone's welcome, come through. Well, we had loads of nice neighbours. Like, till this day, I know them. Honestly, they're all grown up. One time I went back, you know, Copper 90, they did a video, and then they were like showing us the neighborhood and everything, and they were like, I remember you. And I was like, how can you forget me? Come on. We made your last life hell. Like, the ball going across to the park, everyone into their garden, and then we jumping over every time they're building a new fence because of us.
Football games, so.
Yeah. Broken fences.
Do you know, that's so nice in what you described about it's all about understanding our similarities and our differences and coming together, because when we stay away from people, then that creates fear. That's what creates racism, etc.
Yeah.
And then what you just described is exactly what I, as a white English boy, experienced when I was a kid, jumping over fences to get footballs, you know. And it really shows how football brings us all together, you know?
True, honestly. And these people, like, especially if there's kids, if the families have kids grow up so quickly, they will remember every little thing you did for them. They will appreciate it. And even if there's, like, if you have time, maybe chew to them, because kids learn quickly. And the parents are going to be so happy. I don't know, like open your doors to anyone that needs help.
So let's bring it back to your football journey.
Yeah.
So you started taking your brother to football, and you developed a real passion. And you're, although we now know you're now a referee, you're a talented footballer as well. And you were desperate to be a footballer in those early days. I think it's fair to say your parents are quite traditional in their outlook about modesty of women. Is that the best way of putting it?
Yeah.
And a part of that means that they were worried about you playing football for a few reasons. One, because it's not something that
Somali
traditional
do,
Somali women do. Mm-hmm. But two, I think they're also protective of you as well. They were worried about what the response to you would be.
Yeah.
So how did you get around that?
I would say every parent, always, the reason why they do things is because of the perceptions that they have of something. Sometimes they just need to be educated a little. Like, I don't blame them. Like I don't blame them. Before, I was like always fighting them. I'm like, what's wrong? Why can you not? Why can I not play football? Why can I not play for this team? Like at that time, it was difficult. But now I understand where they were coming from. So before, when we were like banging heads every day, they were like, you know, JJ, you're in England. You know, you would never see a girl that's wearing a headscarf playing for the national team, playing for any team for that matter. And then I was like, yeah, but I can be the first. I'm always like challenge them. They're like, "How be the first?" But do you know how many impact you're gonna get? Like, how many things are gonna come your way? Racism. People are gonna be rude for no reason. Like, they don't even know you, and they're gonna be rude. And they're like, "You're not ready for that." And I was like, "How do you know I'm not ready?" And they're like, "You're a child, JJ." And then I was like, "But how do you know I'm not gonna be like?" I was always giving it back to them, and they're like, "Oh, stop being a rebellious child. Go to your room." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." Literally. And then day in, day out. One time, I think I was in year 9. Honestly, my fitness was the best. Like, I was running, I was doing cross country, everything. I was really, really good, even marathon. And then this QPR, they think at that time, even Rachel Yanke, there was Arsenal ladies, QPR ladies, they would come to schools and then coach us. Honestly, it was the best because I had to be like one-on-one. I was like, excuse me, how do I become a footballer? How do I become that? They were giving me so many nice advice. And then QPR, one of the ladies, I forgot her name, she was like, JJ, take this letter. There's trials for QPR. If you want, if you're good enough, you will get in. I think that was that one of the happiest days of my life. I was like, what? Like, literally from nowhere. And then now, because usually you have to have links to have these trials. Mm-hmm. They came to us. I was so happy. And then in our school, the playground was like rough. Like, there was two bins. There was hardly any markings. So I was like, you guys come to this like really rough school, and then you're giving us this opportunity. I was like, my parents are going to be so happy, you don't even want to know. And then that afternoon, after our session finished, we still didn't go home. We stayed for another hour. Our school closed around 8 o'clock. They were so nice, so we get to stay and then continue playing football. And then I went home. I was like, Mom, guess what? She's like, what? She's like, I was like, I have a letter, you know, I get to play for QPR if I'm good. She was like, so what do you want me to do? And she was like, I was like,
this is your mum.
Mary, this is my mum. My dad, I can never talk to him like that. Whoa, that is literally.
You thought she'd be the softer touch.
I'm like, you know, she can make that link, you know, quick one. And then I showed her the letter, and then no, she doesn't even speak English. She was like, what is it? I was like, so basically, we need this letter to be signed, and then maybe you might need to take me to the trial place. And then if I get in, maybe keep taking me to training. She's like, I'm not signing up for that. If your dad hears this, he will know I'm missing in the house. You know, nah, JJ.
How old are you at this point?
I think I was like 14.
Right.
I was so ready. I was like, okay, can I go on my own? Then I'll find the way. She was like, you don't even have a phone. How are you going to go on your own? I said, no, I'm going to get one of the girls to help me, you know, one of the parents. She was like, no. We ripped the paper on that day.
How did that make you feel at that point?
I was like, I don't want to play football anymore. I started crying. I was like, that's it, no more football. And then, you know, in school, I set up, I think from year 8, year 9, I set up a morning class, a morning session. So the girls that I helped to get put together, we play football together around 7. So school started at 8:50 or something. And then we play until then. And then we played break time, lunch time, and then after school. That group did not even see me for like a month or something. Because I don't want to play football. Guys, like, this is the only opportunity I'm ever going to get. So what's the point of me just playing football and never like playing professionally? And they're like, no, I didn't know. I was like, that's it. I don't want to play football. I just want to keep running. I continued running. And then one day, it's really funny. I told my parents I'm going running in Oxford Circus instead of Oxford City. The coach phone died. I had a phone at that time. I think I was in year 10. And then my phone died. And then my parents called the police. They were like, this girl made a runner because she wasn't allowed to play football. The police, they come to the house, they're like, oh, what really happened? I was like, oh, I went to Oxford, not Oxford Circus. And then I came home around 10 o'clock.
I'm listening to obviously you saying about your parents sadly not supporting it and a bit of rejection. And I take myself back to 14. I remember when I didn't make my first Scotland camp and I felt the exact same emotions. And it now just puts life into perspective that I was as heartbroken as probably what you were, and I had no reason whatsoever.
It hurts, you know, I say. Imagine that you can't play football.
Interesting.
So you recover from that eventually.
I recover through from that.
Compromise is probably the right word, isn't it?
Yeah. I think in year 11, I still continued playing football, and then year 11, I finished year 11, I got into coaching. So if I'm not allowed to play, then maybe, because I understand a bit of the game, I want to coach and just volunteer in local clubs. I really liked it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually nice. And you get to manage your own team. And then I was like, how do I become a top coach? I spoke to Middlesex, Kira Allen. She's like, yeah, JJ, there's other avenues, you know, it's not just playing football. And I was like, so yeah. How do I develop? She's like, I want you to shadow some coaches at the local clubs. And I did that. It was so good.
And to be clear, just so the listeners understand, and this is my understanding, and tell me if I've got this wrong, is that the feeling from your parents and feeling from a lot of Somali families is that it's immodest for a woman to be running around and to exert themselves in a sporting context like that. Mm-hmm. So you then went to mum and dad, which was, I mean, if you don't end up as a politician, I'll be amazed, because your ability to work out the right networks, the right ways to get through, and then the right solutions from them. Because you said to mum and dad, well, okay, look, I've still got this passion for football. You don't want me playing because you don't feel it fits in with our traditions. But coaching is different because I won't have to behave that way.
Yeah. So like they were like, if you're not, as long as you're not running around and then, you're on the sideline, right? I was like, yeah, I'm on the sideline. And they're like, go for it. My dad was like, I'm happy. I'm like, excellent.
Until you're 14 or 15 and you start coaching. I mean, you spoke about being at school and pulling together what was effectively...
I was just about to say, it sounds like you're already doing it.
Yeah.
Like, organising a group before school, and that stuck in my head that you've already got that sort of leadership skill and, you know, you're the one that's bringing people together, so...
No, those girls, honestly, to this day, they remember it. Even the teachers, they messaged me and they're like, JJ... Honestly, I could not even imagine you do anything else. And the girls, some of the excuses when we were in school, they're like, oh, but I don't, this is my school my school shoes. If my mom sees me, I was like, okay, wait, let's go find someone else wearing trainers.
Oh, so they weren't scuffing up their shoes and bringing them home. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'm like, let's go borrow those
trainers. There's always a solution when you're involved, basically.
But I think it does. When you say there's always a solution, it's like, right, I can't do this, I'm going to do that and still be involved in it, but... I think a lot of people, when they're told that, would have just gone, right, obviously football's not for me, and maybe I'll go down a completely different avenue. But you stuck to it, and as we'll come on to in a little bit, it's paying off.
Well, yeah, before we get to the refereeing aspect of it, which is, again, a bit of an accident in many ways, I wanted to talk about female athletes wearing the hijab.
Yeah.
In, I think it was 2007, FIFA banned women from wearing the hijab. Yeah. And that only returned that in 2014. And then I think about women's football in this country, which was banned until 1971.
50 years, wow.
It's extraordinary it's very easy for us in the UK to look at Somalia and say, well, they should be letting women play sport, should be letting women play football. Well, we weren't letting women play football here until 1971, and we weren't letting them wear the hijab until 2014. Mm-hmm. But then, actually, to then flip it to the positives, so I'm a big cricket fan, and I watched the 100 this summer. I watched the men's 100, I watched the women's 100, and their bowling for Birmingham Phoenix was a young Scottish cricketer called Abtar Maqsood. Mm-hmm. And my heart swelled, is that the right way of putting it, when I saw her bowling. And little moments like that, when you see, I think it was the Jordan women's football team all playing in their hijabs, etc.
Top players.
Yeah, well, that must really make you feel progress is being made, and maybe in another lifetime, another little JJ will be playing instead of referee.
Yeah, imagine. I think with all these things, like I remember my parents using that as an example, saying, oh, look, FIFA banned headscarf. See, even all these, I was like, oh, wow, the whole world is against me now. There's nothing I can do. But still, I found ways. But, you know, these things, like, it happens. You need people that are like determined, that actually care about the game, to step up and say something. That's why I'm more than happy to share my story, because, you know, it can make a difference. Because end of the day, we want people to be educated. Like with sports, the only way my parents didn't let me is because they think, okay, I'm going to be running around just that. But I told them the benefit of running around, you know, your mental health is good, your fitness is going to become better, you make good friends, and they're like, okay, but we didn't know that. I'm like, yeah, but it's too late. But can you like apologize for all the things you've done? Like, come on, like, I missed my time. And they did apologize. I'm like, yeah, Jay.
I've seen recently that Nike have brought out Nike headscarves.
Yeah.
For me, that's like, that was when I watched the video again, my heart swole, as Matt says. I thought that was huge. So how did that make you feel? Were you part of the promo video?
No, but I was part of one other thing, like the second headscarf, and I was like, me?
How did it make you feel? Just people listening know that it's not a big deal, but
no, it's massive.
I think it's absolutely huge.
It's massive. Like the time that I heard Nike have their own hijab for Muslim girls, I think that I was like, wow, how is a whole company that big, you know, putting something out there for, you know, a community that are so small? I'm like, wow, like that's kind of big. And then it makes, like, I referee and play with the headscarf, and it makes life so much easier. Mm. And I'm like, I wish like things like that were there in my days, because then I'd be like, yeah, but you know, Nike supports women playing sports. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, it's just, you can never regret, like whatever happens, happens. We just keep on moving. So I things like that make me really proud. Like it makes me happy.
Well, you mentioned wearing the headscarf when refereeing. Let's get to refereeing. So your focus was coaching. You hadn't thought at that time about refereeing.
No, I was done. I was like, I'm going to be on the sideline. I want to coach. That's it.
And then refereeing came around. Was it a total accident, wasn't it?
Proper accident. Like, you can never plan this. This was like, I'm just next to this tall coach. And then I'm just like, oh, let me just watch how he deals with these girls. Because at this time, I'm coaching, but I don't have a team. Like, I'll just go there. Like, so many different teams. And then basically, the guy that I'm shadowing, he was so nice. He was like, yeah, JJ, this is what I do. So when the girl's upset, you know, this is what I do. And I'm like, that's nice, you know. And then I was like, okay. I'll ask, like, nice questions that will make a difference. And then one day, the lady was like, JJ, honestly, we need you to cover for that referee. I was like, I'm not even a referee. Like, look at me. I'm wearing some baggy tracksuit. What's this? And then she's like, yeah, JJ, please go and help. And I was like, I'm more than happy to help. Okay, let's go. Like, I was there to volunteer anyways. I had no other life, literally. I'm like, come, let me just help out. Why not? I'm there to learn about the coaching. But yeah, I swear I didn't even think about it like that. And then the lady, she was like, okay, go. And I went. And then I could see so many parents staring at me, and I was like, whoa, these parents, like, what do they want? Like, oh my gosh, like, and they're so tall. The parents are huge. I'm like, whoa. And the girls are so small. I'm like, oh, can I referee these little ones? And then I went on the pitch, and the parents are like, thank you very much for covering. We really appreciate you. Honestly, if it wasn't for the parents, I would never have continued. Because that's, now they're different. I don't know. When I'm refereeing and I'm seeing parents fighting,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, why are you fighting? It's about the kids, not you. Like, every day I'm like, do I card the parents or do I card the players? Like, hello, what's this?
And what's the reaction to, so you're 5'3", smiley girl and a headscarf. You
know? Yeah.
So when everyone's staring at you, you're probably in the nicest possible way. They were probably blown away by the fact that this little smiley girl was refereeing. Do you think people respond to you differently as a referee, both negatively and positively?
Negatively, I don't know, because I don't know what's inside people's heads. But most of the time, parents come to me, they greet me, they say, thank you so much for helping out today. Thank you, you know, for being there for our daughters. You know, the daughters are like, the girls are so nice. They're like, oh, referee, it's nice to see a girl referee. Oh, like you hear little comments like that. And it makes a massive difference. Like some of the parents are like, it's nice to see a young person, you know, a girl referee and girls team. And I'm like, yes, thank you.
So you discovered a passion for refereeing and you excelled at it.
Yeah.
So the first game, I think they were 6 or 7 years of age, these little girls. Yeah, but you then move on to grown-ups and not just grown-ups, men.
Proper men.
Like, I mean, I'm fascinated to hear what it's like when you've got, you know, 6 foot tall blokes staring down at you. I mean, how do you hold the discipline with them?
No, honestly, I became smart during during my time of refereeing. Before, I used to come like very close, so that makes me very short. So now I'm like a bit distant. I'm like, yeah, we're the same height. Like, relax. No, but honestly, with the when I was the way I did it was like girls team, and then under 14s, 15s, 16s. Like, I didn't jump straight into the adult game, and then it was really weird. Like, I couldn't find women's team in my area. So I was like, whoa, I want to, you know, have this step so I don't become overwhelmed. I was like, when I'm done with the youth team, I want to do women's team and then maybe men's team. No, straight from youth boys to men. And that was scary. I'm not even going to lie. Like, the coaches are like very aggressive when they're talking, they're spitting. I'm like, imagine I'm refereeing these and then someone spits at me or something. I'm like, yo.
And but there's also the physical element as well, isn't it? You know, your size difference with them means it's scary for you.
Honestly, I got it in the bag. Don't worry. If they run, I'm running after them. I'm chasing them.
What sort of level was it?
It was grassroots, like Sunday. Grassroots.
So even that, when I've got friends that have played grassroots and I go and watch them Sunday morning and things like that.
Still physical.
That can be scary because I think the level, you know, Lee's playing it now in the Women's Championship or, professional level. You can probably say and do things without any consequences because you know someone's not going to punch you in the face on the pitch.
Exactly.
You know, there's cameras watching.
Scarier.
Yeah, exactly.
I could probably try and be a bit more, I could probably say things that I wouldn't get away with because I knew that no one's going to punch you in the pitch.
Yes.
But when you're at that level, it kicks off and, you know, some people have been out the night before and some people are frustrated with their own lives, so it's their time to take it out.
Yeah.
How scary was that? And did you, you know, did you have any scary experiences in those early days?
Yeah. Honestly, you know, these guys, I knew what I was getting myself into. I was like, I even met some that came out of prison like the day before. And they're like, ref, I just came out of prison. You don't know me, you know. I'm going to pick you up. I'm like, whoa, relax. I was like, you're here to play football. You're not here to beat anybody up. Like, I'm disciplining big men, fully grown men. I'm like, honestly, I have nothing to tell you. I just want you to respect yourself. I want you to respect me. I like the game as much as you do. And my job is different to your job. Your job is to play and my job is to referee. If I make mistakes, I'm on my own. I'm like, there are no assistants. And there's a park in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, oh my gosh, anything can happen here. Like, I hear stories, referees' cars getting wrecked. They're getting life threats. Everything is just so scary. But you know when you like it, like, you only like the game. Like, there are you know things come with it, but it's just, it did scare me a bit, but it never made me stop. I still continue. Like, it's so cold. Like, it's raining. I have, like, very bad injuries. And then my parents are like, it's not even worth it. Like, you're not even getting any money, that good money out of it. What is your problem, JJ? Why can't you just stick to you and do a normal girl stuff? Why are you chasing these grown men?
What was their reaction to you going from being on the sideline to then running around again as a referee?
Yeah, good question. So because now I'm a bit grown up. I'm like, guys, I know I was on the sideline. I know the deal was to just stay on the sideline. But now, you know, duty calls. I'm a referee. I've completed the course. I told them before, like, normal secrets. Like, before it was like me hiding my boots, me doing my thing. No one would find out that I'm playing football. And then, my mum, one day she snitches me. Yeah, life goes on. And then the refereeing bit, I was like, okay, this is the course and this is what it involves in. I'm running, I'm on the pitch. This is not a joke anymore.
Yeah, refs have to be pretty fit nowadays.
Pretty, like, literally, they have to be fitter than players. Literally, it's just scary. And then I was like, yeah, I want to pursue this coaching is nice. I'm still going to continue, but this is the second, this is the only other way I can get the satisfaction I was getting when I was playing. This actually makes me happy. It's 90 minutes, maybe extra time. And they were like, so what does it involve in running around in the pitch? And then my dad was like, you know what? Okay, let's sit down, let's talk. And I'm like, yeah, he wants to talk. Let's talk, Dad, let's go. And then he was so like understanding. He's like, you know, if this happens, this is what you should do. Like, if somebody like is racially abusive to you, you should contact these people. As in like, you know, he was like, you should speak out. Like, you shouldn't, because I know you're going to be like, oh, you know, I let you play football. I mean, I let you referee, and then you're not going to let us know anything that's happened, all the abuse. He's like, I don't want you to be like that. Like, I know this, it's corrupted out there. So if there's anything, you know, share it with us. If you, you know, give cards or if anybody, you know, share it with us. No more hiding, no more secrets. Promise? Promise, okay. But I didn't tell him how cold it was, you know. I wish I told him a bit earlier, because he would have told me like to put like cream and everything like on my body. And then I got into that level with him. He was so understanding. Every day I'm like, yeah, Dad, like this is how I reacted. He's like, no, you shouldn't have reacted. I was like, you know nothing about football. How do you know? And he was like, I have a people skills, you know. And I was like, oh man, we should have been friends a long time ago.
So that's nice. So you, he's kind of really come to terms with your involvement in football now. That's really lovely.
So much. Honestly, like one of the, I think, the, I won't forget this day because it was so nice. My neighbour, she comes home with a newspaper. And then she was like, look, your daughter's on the newspaper. And then my mum was like, yeah, I'm proud of her. And I was like, mum, don't try.
Have they ever come and watched you referee?
No, they haven't. Till this day, they haven't.
Is that sort of an ambition for you to for them to
that,
see?
That has to be the dream. That, it has to be in a stadium, not in a park.
Yeah.
Because in the park, I don't know, if I make a mistake, I get rushed. It's going to be my fault. No. Yeah. So like, hopefully, if I reach a good level, I can give them tickets, they can come down. They're more than happy to come down because now we're on the same level, you know. They want me to make it.
And that's the next stage of the journey for you. So you've been refereeing a long time now. You're refereeing at national league level in women's football. And I think women's football is where you want to be.
Yeah. That's
so be. Next season, I'm bearing in mind you've got a tough tackling midfielder from the women's championship set next to you.
Go on.
You expect to be refereeing in the women's championship. That's really exciting. I mean, they're big clubs in really good stadiums.
Across the country, yeah.
But you know, you just need to make sure you're leaning on cards if you go down and refereeing Bromley when Crystal Palace are playing.
Unconscious bias, is that a thing?
All I'm going to be like is, how are you doing? Joey style.
You know, I'm prone to get a few yellows now and again, but I've never been red carded, so
that's good.
You're not the one.
No.
I was going to say, don't set that as a challenge. That would make for one that's hell of a that would probably go viral on social media.
Do you remember your first red card?
I remember my first card, and I remember my first yellow as well. It was a very bad tackle on the ankle, and the guy was like, referee, in the Premier League, none of this would have been even a red card. I was like, are you in the Premier League? You're in a random park in the middle of nowhere. And then he's like, yeah.
Do you think women's football differs to men's football?
Oh, yes, there's a massive difference. With the women's football, I don't know, the aggression is there, but referees tend to control it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, like, the women want to get in there. But, of course, their level of fitness, the strength is different with the men's game. With the men's game, like, it's a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, but I prefer the women's game because I think with the women's game, it's the respect is there.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, the respect is there for the referee, but the respect for each other is like, I'm like, girls, like, come on, let's just focus on the game. Whereas men are like threatening each other. And I'm like, guys, like, you're here to play football. So it's just, it's different. Like, they're more serious. Some, because like, I do the men's Sunday league, some just came out of the car. Literally, they were in the club the night before. So I'm like, wow.
What's your thoughts on, obviously I can't say much when it comes to referees, and I'm sure Fraser, you agree, like, as a player, we're not fond of referees.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're changing that for us all at the minute, though. Yeah, but in women's football, I feel like when there's a woman's referee at the minute, they they're trying to take the aggression out of the women's game a lot. So it'll be a tackle that's a bit aggressive, but it doesn't warrant a card. The card comes straight out. Yeah. Whereas I do watch male football and I do see that being allowed. And the game is so controlled that it's hard to make contact now.
Mm-hmm.
What's your views on just let them play goal?
Yeah, so I haven't refereed at that level, but I watch a lot of the WSL champions, and I would say every referee is different. With me, I love to see the action. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, end of the day, what's more important is the player safety. So it depends on the referee. If they think that, you know, something will lead to something, they have to stop it.
Yeah.
So I think women's football, year in, year out, will get better, bigger, and now we're getting a lot of TV deals, so more people will be interested, and more people will have their input and be like, you know, we want this type of referees. But I don't know, the system's already done like that, so let's see what happens.
One thing I've not touched on too much, we mentioned Wembley at the beginning. I guess I'm slightly taping you back a little bit, but I think Wembley's very important to you. Both the stadium itself.
Yeah.
I'm interested here. I know that you went to some games, some England games with the school, at least one England game with the school.
Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of British Asians or British Muslims who have felt not safe to go and watch England play, or not safe to go to football games. And I'm really glad you pulled that face, because that creates a little bit of hope in my mind. It made me really sad. I recently went to watch England play cricket and was chatting to a lot of Indian fans, and they were big football fans, and they said, though, we don't go and watch England play football. We'd like to just go to our clubs, but not so much England. We don't feel safe. You don't feel like that, obviously. Yeah. I mean, talk to us a little bit about, I don't want you to go into any detail about racism or talk about anything that you don't feel comfortable talking about, but do you feel included within our footballing society? You felt safe at Wembley?
Yeah, I feel really safe in Wembley. And it's sad that some people feel that, you know, they're not safe in the stadium. And they have their reasons for it, you know. No one just says stuff. And it's so sad that to this day we're feeling, you know, that we're feeling not safe. Like, there are people that are ruining it. And I wouldn't say the whole of England fans are bad, but it's just the maybe minority that are ruining it for some people, and they should be stopped, you know. Actions should be taken so they don't repeat that bad behaviour. But with me, I feel like because Wembley is where I grew up, I know the area inside out. The stadium is literally my local club, basically, because I'm there most of the time. I love Wembley Stadium, and I don't feel like... thankfully, I don't feel like I don't belong there. Like, I love it there.
It's a happy place for you.
Proper happy place. I literally, that's my main stadium.
And then I was also, there's an obvious reference to make, another young person that came to this country, not as a refugee, but having lost his father in Jamaica, Raheem Sterling came over and was brought up in Wembley and scored lots of goals at Wembley. Raheem must be one hell of an inspiration to you, as I'm sure he is for all young people in Wembley.
He is, because Raheem is also from Brent. I'm from Brent, so it's just, I love the fact that he made it happen. You know, all the kids in Brent actually look up to him. So, like, when there's schools, you know, if you go into different schools, you'll see that there's posters of Raheem Sterling. These kids actually look up to him. He is their superhero. And I just can't wait for his career to continue and get better.
And then one other thing I wanted to mention is a player of an older generation than Raheem, but you recently did a podcast with Ian Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I wanted to mention, not just because it's advertising a rival podcast, but it is a good one, so listen to that as well as listening to this one, please, everyone. But Ian Wright's very much been an ally for women's football.
Yeah.
How important are allies for women's football, and also allies for refugees and for people who don't have the same opportunities as someone like me, as a white man growing up in this country? Life's so much easier for me than it would be for someone like you. So how important are allies in general?
Allies, I would say, first of all, I'm just so glad that Ian, like someone with that club, like someone with that status, supporting the women's team, the women's games. I think allies are there, and not a lot of people are like, they pick and choose. The people that have gone on board with the women's game are just like literally they are the best, because end of the day everyone have their own platforms. It's their choice whether they want to support the women's team with it, women's games, and either way women's game is still gonna get bigger and better, because that's what's gonna happen, that's the journey that we're going on. And I'm just so excited that people like him jump on board, other people will come along, and honestly they're needed somehow.
But they help open doors and create positivity and opportunities. And
yeah,
one other thing I wanted to mention to you was social media. You seem to use social media pretty well. You've got a big following. You move in circles that you could not have dreamed of moving in when you were 10 years old coming over here, both at home and in Somalia. And here I know that you met the supermodel Halima.
Yeah.
I mean, Halima. You can't compete with her in terms of social media. She's got 1.3 million followers on Instagram.
She's the GOAT, right? So she's good.
Social media must be really important to you.
Yeah, but I'm not like big or anything. I'm just, local.
But it's how people hear your story as well, isn't it?
True. Yeah, but Halima Aden, honestly, she broke a lot of things. Like someone that wears a headscarf to be a model, like that has never, on a big platform like that, she's doing bits. And when I met her, she was like, JJ, you're doing great. And I'm like, no, you're doing great. I'm just doing me, like this is me. But you just put yourself in a position where, you know, you can change a lot of perspectives, inspire a lot of young girls. I'm proud of you. And she was like, I'm proud of you too. I was like, yeah, do you keep doing you, girl?
And it's nice. We talked earlier on about the hijab, and it can be seen, I think, from outside as being inhibiting, because there are certain aspects to it that, because it's about modesty, for instance. But I think people like Halima, people like you, are showing that it doesn't have to be inhibiting. And I mean, is that the way that you see it?
Yeah, I see it like that. As long as you're modest, you can still exercise. But some people, because of culture, some cultures say that women should be, some cultures allow women to work. You know, most of them are like, okay, we want you to stay at home, you know, be a mom, be a good daughter, you know, no running around. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, I'm still going to be a good daughter, but I need to be physical. I want to do activities, you know, that is what I like. So if you educate these people, then they'll be on board, because end of the day, no one's going to be like to you. Oh, if you tell them the benefit of exercise, the benefit of football, then they have to jump on board. There's no other choice.
And then the last thing I wanted to ask you is, if you think in 5 years' time, what would be your hope and your dreams that you will have achieved?
Oh, 5 years' time, yeah? Okay. I would say realistically, I'm already on the WSL. I'm joking. No. I want to be on the WSL, and I want to do a lot of like men's leagues, because that's the only way I would say you can invite more people. Because, you know, so women's game have the audience, men's game have the audience. So if I'm there in both men and women's game, then more people get to see me, more people get to be inspired on with my story. And yeah, I can even get some of the, I can speak to the players, I'll be like, yeah, do your refereeing course, you know, you never know where it might take you. So yeah, I want to spread the words as much as I can and reach as many places.
Amazing. Well, look, I have absolutely no doubt that you will achieve that. There's so many things that shine through with you. Your self-belief and confidence is remarkable. And I wonder whether it comes from being the upheaval from when you're 10 years of age.
It has to be.
If you can get through something like that as a 10-year-old, then you can get through anything.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Thank you.
Amazing. JJ, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Football Journeys. You can follow us on social media on both Twitter and Instagram at JourneysPod. To support the pod and get early access, premium content and all the other advantages that we can send your way, sign up on Patreon at patreon.com/footballjourneys. For just £2 per month, you'll be helping to fund the cost of producing this podcast whilst also getting benefits that other listeners don't. This is Football Journeys.